Listening Dog Media.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Offside Rule. Women's football unlocked.
Even, thank you very much for your time and for joining us to talk about what is a pressing topic in the women's game. You just feel like the ACL conversation is going to rumble on and on, but you're actually doing something about it. So can you start by telling us about Kitman Labs and the work that you've been doing from a data collection point of view with the WSL and NWSL as well?
Yeah, I think... The role that we've been trying to play is helping these organizations to collect as much information as they can about the medical profile of the athletes, what's happening to them from an injury perspective, and then everything that's going on in training, everything that's going on in games, and trying to help them to stitch both of those pieces of information together and better understand player health.
And it seems like it's so multifaceted. It's not going to be a simple exercise to be able to find out what is the root cause. What would you say that your initial findings have been, and how you feel that there's more research to be done going forwards?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things is that there's an incredible amount of research that exists that tells us, you know, some of the key pieces of information about the differences between female athletes and the female body that allows us to understand why there is a higher risk of things like ACL injuries. But on the flip side of that, there's a very disappointing amount of research in relation to sports science itself and the amount of information that's being collected about female health, about the menstrual cycle, and about injuries themselves that have allowed people to perform really applied research. And I think the role that we've been trying to play is to actually to bridge the gap there and to be one of the first organizations on the planet to help these leagues to actually perform that research, you know, live and in an applied environment. I think it's probably early to be able to be able to come out and say, okay, these are the top two reasons why this is happening. Because there is just such a lack of previous data collection on these specific types of injuries and female athletes. All of the research around ACL injuries that you look at in sport, or the vast majority of it, in this type of environment, looks at male athletes, which is hugely disappointing.
And I mean, I've been immersed in this topic for a little while now. And in my role at Sky Sports, I spent some time with Manchester City. They had some scientists doing work behind the scenes, and they'd even got postgraduate diplomas being taken to try and look into some of the causes. There's the wellbeing lab as well that we've worked with a few times, and they're making some inroads. And also at Chelsea, I'd spoken to Emma Hayes quite a few times about the issue. But I think one of the key differentials here to what you're doing and what the individual clubs have been investing and looking at the highest level is that for them, it's a little bit secret. It's a little bit behind closed doors. They're not sharing that information as widely yet. And I think that's because they're also looking for those advantages. I know from speaking to Chelsea, the way that they've monitored their players, they think that they're starting to get some positive data. But what you're doing is doing it on a level that is going to be available to everybody. It will be shared info. And importantly, I think for a lot of people listening to this podcast, it means that grassroots football will benefit, because not everyone is going to have the money to invest in a dedicated sports scientist, or the bits that I was seeing at Manchester City, they were doing sort of litmus tests and taking saliva samples and all of these things. But not everyone has got that infrastructure at the club to be able to pay for it. So ideally, is that what you're looking for, is that this is something that can be taken away, and women's football from the bottom up, you can protect those athletes before they reach the WSL or the NWSL?
Yeah, 100%. We want to have an impact on the broader game. But I think what's also challenging about, you know, a Chelsea or a Manchester City doing this by themselves is the size of their data set is tiny. You think about the number of injuries that occur per year. You know, they may pick up 15, 20 injuries across the entire team. How many of those are going to be ACL injuries? Like, you're talking about one, maybe two if you have a bad year. Like, the sample size from a data science or analytics perspective at an individual club is tiny. They'd need, you know, 15, 20 years worth of data. But if we combine all of the clubs together, we start to look across multiple leagues, like we're starting to do across leagues like the NWSL and across the Women's Super League. Now we actually can, you know, within a year, within 2 years, within 3 years, we can start to make some really robust findings that really change the game. And for us, yes, we want our teams and our partners to gain a competitive edge. But, you know, what we're talking about here is, like, we think, like, player health and safety is a much more important topic, and something that can impact so many athletes, and not just potentially in those leagues, but, as you say, down in broader leagues where they don't have the, you know, the support, and in youth football where they don't have an understanding and they don't have the infrastructure to be able to make that impact. And we feel really passionately about that.
I think the top clubs do see that wider benefit that will happen, and maybe they'll start feeding into what you're collecting. In terms of the data, how much data do you need, Stephen? I mean, when you say that, you know, this is early stages, what are we looking at? How long?
Yeah, well, listen, I think our belief is that within, you know, a season to two seasons, we'll have enough information to be able to really start providing some really strong signposting. And that's generally what we've seen from work that we've done in other areas as well. I think the interesting thing here is that the amount of data that can be collected within these environments about specific aspects of things like the menstrual cycle that people haven't really wanted to collect information on before. Nobody wants to talk about it. Everybody wants to ignore it and tiptoe around it, especially males when they come into female sports. But I think there's a huge amount of information that we can collect on that. We can understand where somebody is in their menstruation cycle. That gives us a huge amount of information about hormonal release at different points in time. We know from other scientific literature the impact that estrogen has on tendon and ligament stiffness, and we know that that plays a huge role in how the propensity for somebody to have a ligamentous or tendinous injury. And then when we couple that further with things like overload, with things like recovery, with changes in biomechanics, and then we see, you know, differences that would cause, you know, I suppose breakdown or would cause an increase in that pivot shift that occurs for an ACL, it can really start to open up that aperture and tell us things that we didn't understand before. And I don't expect it to take, you know, 4 or 5 years, but we do believe that we'll be able to start seeing some really, really interesting findings very early in this project.
Now, earlier on, Tash Dowie recorded a few questions as well. She's a Liverpool ambassador and she's got some duties this afternoon, and we spoke to you a little bit later on after we recorded the main show, but we did record some from her. So there might be touching on some other things that you've touched on, but also I know that she's got some pressing questions from a player perspective.
I'd love to know as well, why does the ACLs tend to be like no impact events? You know, when you hear about ACLs, no one was around them. It wasn't a tackle, you know, it was no impact. Like, why is that the case? Like, why does that tend to be the case?
Yeah, I think it's a really great question, but vast majority of the answer to that is that it comes down to anatomy. So females have wider hips to prepare their bodies for childbirth. And the impact that that has specifically on ACLs is that a wider hip creates what they call a wider Q angle. And that Q angle is basically the angle between the top of your hip and then your knee. And in males, that's straighter because their hips are not as wide. In females, it's more angular because of that, the birthing canal. And why that matters is that an ACL injury normally happens from what they call a pivot and then a shift. And that wider Q angle increases the angle on that pivot and makes that pivot action much stronger. And then when we do have, you know, either some level of laxity in the joint, some level of biomechanical instability, some level of fatigue, etc., that shift can happen just much easier. It doesn't require any level of contact like you've just heard. So it means that there is just a much higher propensity for that to happen in female athletes. So it's much easier for that pivot shift action to be unlocked. So we normally see that happen from landing from a jump, because it creates an over rotation essentially in that joint, or it generally happens from like a slowing down or a deceleration or a change of direction. So it doesn't require contact like some other injuries that we would expect.
It's really interesting because that probably plays into Tash's other question, one of the other things that we were talking about, Tash, which you were talking about how you never really hear of older players, you know, 30 plus doing it as much as you do younger players. But maybe that, when you think of the childbearing, the prime years are probably that mid 20 to 30 period, and then post 30, perhaps there's some biological changes. I don't know whether that plays into that, the reason why we don't see as many 30 plus ACLs.
Yeah, potentially. And maybe even, you know, when we do talk about the importance of things like hormonal data as it relates to this, we know that hormonal release and the amount of hormones present at different points in time through the menstrual cycle will be different when somebody is, you know, younger, and they are in that like peak, you know, I suppose childbirthing portion of their life cycle. And I maybe that plays a role, right? Again, it's one of the reasons why this research is hugely important, and our ability to monitor as much information as we can, because this is a really complex topic, and the last thing that we want to do is jump in and say this is the answer. We want to have a period of observation. We want to collect the relevant information. We want to look at all of those, you know, I suppose, colliding variables, and then be able to provide a very robust piece of research that helps us understand what's happening here.
Tash had one more question
as well. Throughout my playing career, probably only in maybe 2013-14, when I was at Liverpool, did we get introduced to kind of ACL warm-ups. That's probably the only time throughout my 20 years of playing that, you know, we kind of ever really spoke about ACL prevention. You know, yes, I know we do rehab and your prehab, but it was never really specific to actually ACL prevention. So, you know, are clubs educated enough? Are players educated enough as to regards to this ACL prevention kind of protocol?
Yeah, I would say the answer to that is 100% no. I think we are seeing some very forward-thinking clubs, and like the ones that you mentioned earlier, Lindsay, in that having, you know, Manchester City and Chelsea have researchers that are looking into these topics. Well, they're realizing that things like what she's referring to as this ACL warm-up is like a neuromuscular preactivation. What they're trying to do is essentially switch on all of the receptors around those joints, activate the muscles that essentially stop that over pivot and shift that we spoke about, stimulate essentially the body to ensure that they're moving through those pathways and essentially preparing themselves for action and stopping that from happening. And there's a lot of documented research about this concept of preactivation and how it helps with better neuromuscular patterns. And hence why you have like some very forward-thinking clubs leaning in and jumping into that. But in the same way that I think probably 15, 20 years ago, we saw the FIFA 11 Plus being brought out, which was like a warm-up concept for all, you know, soft tissue injuries that like impacted the broader game of football everywhere. I think FIFA have a role to play, and I think like, you know, governing bodies in women's football have a role to play globally in terms of having something very similar. Like, it doesn't need to be the 11 plus anymore, but whatever this new concept is for the female game for preactivation to protect against key injuries like this, which when you think about the fact that the 11 plus was brought out to try and stop groin injuries and hamstring injuries and calf injuries, things like that, injuries that last 3, 4, 5 weeks, an ACL injury destroys an entire career. And the importance of this to the female game, and I think for female participation rates, etc., is hugely important, and is, you know, equally as, if not more, deserving of you know, heavy investment to solve this problem as the 11 plus was.
Yeah, and thinking of just a couple of examples that spring to mind, but Aoife Mannion, Lucy Staniforth, I think if you do that first ACL, you are so much more inclined to do it for a second time. So if you can prevent that first one, that's the key, really.
For sure, and potentially even, like, we haven't done this yet, and I don't think anybody has, but looking at, you know, performance levels in athletes post-ACL as well. Like, do they ever get to the same, you know, back to the same point? Or does it shorten careers? Or does it, like, it's got to impact their ability, their development, because they miss out on, like, 9 to 12 months worth of, like, key development as well during that period of time. So does it, you know, does it limit somebody's ability to actually improve? Does it stop them from actually achieving their potential? There's so much to unpack there that... this is a hugely, hugely important topic, which, you know, is why we're so excited to be talking about it here today.
Brilliant. We are so grateful that you did. Can I finish by asking you about the investment side of it? Because this is going to be a costly project, Stephen. You know, if you're going to get research and you're going to get data from so many clubs, how is that working for you as a company? How much are you having to outlay for all of this?
Yeah, well, listen, I think we wanted to be one of the first companies in this space to really put our money where our mouth is. And, you know, it's easy to come and say, hey, you want to stand up for female athletes, you believe it's important, etc. But the reality is the female game doesn't have the same, you know, investment in revenue as the male game today. So this is why research hasn't happened in this area before. So what we've tried to do, and through the partnerships that we've struck with the WSL and with the NWSL, is to be able to come in and say, okay, you guys are investing a certain amount in the platform. We are going to couple that. We're going to meet that with investment on our side. We're going to put data scientists on this. We're going to bring researchers to the fore as well. We're going to, you know, structure the technology platform to collect, you know, the relevant data to help you guys understand the most important problems that you have. And that's not small, right? That's not a five-figure investment. That's a six-figure investment. But we believe it's important, and we believe it's also going to help us to be able to better support the female game as it continues to grow, and to be a leader in innovation and research and in player health and safety. And that's what we exist for. So if we're not willing to do that, and we're not willing to make that investment, then we're probably not worthy to be in this industry.
And are there any platforms or a website that you can tell us about where, if anyone wants to find out more information, anything that we haven't covered here, or just track the progress, where can they find that info?
Yeah, well, everything is available on www.kitmanlabs.com, and we continue to try and push out news through our X, previously Twitter, channel.
Yes,
and,
I'm always doing that as well, Stephen. Formerly known as Twitter, yeah.
So yeah, we try and push everything out, or lots out, through social media, but everything's available on our website. And as research is coming out, not just in the female game, but in the male game, we'll continue to push out research there. And yeah, we're incredibly excited about the future. And if anybody's interested, please feel free to reach out.
Excellent. Any breakthrough findings, please keep us posted, and all the best with it. Much appreciated.
Thanks so much.
The Offside Rule. This is a Listening Dog Media production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.